64. To Nikolai Nikolaevich Strahov. Dresden. April the 23rd, May the 5th, 1871. In the first half of the letter, Dostoevsky advises Strahov on no account to abandon his critical work. As a consequence of the colossal revolutions which are taking place in politics, as well as in the narrower literary sphere, we behold general culture and capacity for critical judgment momentarily shattered and undone. People have taken it into their heads that they have no time for literature, as if literature were a pastime. Fine culture, that. In consequence of which, the level of literary taste is so terribly low that no critic of today, however remarkable he may be, can have his proper influence on the public. Dobrolyubov's and Pisarev's successes really derive from their having totally ignored any such thing as literature, that sole domain of intellectual and spiritual vitality here below. But one must not reckon with such phenomena. One is bound to continue one's critical work. Forgive my offering you advice, but that is how I should act, were I in your place. In one of your brochures there was a wonderful piece of observation which nobody before you has made, namely that every writer of any significance, any authentic talent, has finally yielded to national sentiment and become a Slavophile. Thus, for example, the facile Pushkin created, long before any of the Slavophiles, that figure of the chronicler in the monastery at Chudov. That is to say, he grasped far better than all the Kirievskis, Hamyakovs, etc., the inmost essence of Slavophilism. And then look at Herzen. What a longing, what a need to strike into the true path. Only because of his personal weaknesses did he fail to do it. Nor is that all. This law of the conversion to nationality is not only to be observed in writers and poets, but in all other directions. So that one can, in the end, set up yet another law. If any man has genuine talent, he will have also that impulse to return to the people from the crumbling upper regions of society. But if he has no talent, he will not only remain in those crumbling regions, but even exile himself to foreign lands, or turn to Catholicism, or what not. Bielinski, whom you even today admire, was, as regards talent, feeble and impotent. Therefore he condemned Russia, and, in full consciousness of what he was doing, reviled his native land. People will have much to say of Bielinski in the future, and then you'll see. But I want only to say one more thing. That idea which you have expressed is enormously important, and demands further and more specialized treatment. Your letters give me great delight. But about your last opinion on my novel, I want to say this to you. First, you praise far too highly those excellencies which you find therein. Second, you point with admirable acumen to its principal fault. Yes, that was and ever is my greatest torment. I never can control my material. Whenever I write a novel, I crowd it up with a lot of separate stories and episodes. Therefore the whole lacks proportion and harmony. You have seen this astonishingly well. How frightfully have I always suffered from it, for I have always been aware that it was so. And I have made another great mistake besides. Without calculating my powers, I have allowed myself to be transported by poetic enthusiasm, and have undertaken an idea to which my strength was not equal. N.B. The force of poetic enthusiasm is, to be sure, as for example with Victor Hugo, always stronger than the artistic force. Even in Pushkin one detects this disproportion. But I destroy myself thereby. I must further add that the move to Russia and the many anxieties which await me in the summer will immensely injure the novel. Anyhow, I thank you for your sympathy. What a pity it is that we shall not see one another for so long. In the meantime, I am your most devoted Fyodor Dostoevsky.